Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. I was extremely happy to attend the Vino Verde experience in New York City last month. Vino Verde literally means green wine. However, that is not a reference to the color. There are two connotations to the name. First, and the more accepted one, is that it is a wine to be consumed young, i.e. green. The second meaning is in relation to the fact that there is a lot of rain in the area, so the landscape is green. Whichever interpretation you would like to accept, Vino Verde is a Portuguese wine that originated in the historic Minho province in the far north of the country. The modern-day Vino Verde region was originally designated in 1908, includes the old Minho province plus adjacent areas to the south. However, in 1976, the old province was dissolved. During my time at the event, I interviewed two somms who were working the event, several winemakers, and the president of the Vino Verde Alliance. A few takeaways from the event include that Vino Verde is not a grape variety. It is a DOC for the production of the wine. The name literally means green wine, but translates to young wine. And the wine may be red, white, or rosé, although the majority is white. A Vino Verde can also be a sparkling, a late harvest, or even brandy, and may have slight effervescence. Sláinte! So I am here today at the Vino Verde exhibit in New York City at the Canal Studio.
Yes.
It is quite beautiful here, and I am here with Kara, who is a somm here in New York City, and she is going to fill us in on some information about Vino Verde as the region itself. So, first of all, I know it's very, the climate there is very specific. We've got several different microclimates within there. So what would be the generalization of that climate for it?
To really just generally talk about Vino Verde, it's all about the maritime rainfall. So the Atlantic Ocean, huge impact, a lot of rain. So annual rainfall higher than Bordeaux, higher than any other maritime climate-based region. So the rainfall, the oceanic influence, and a really kind of cool, long growing season is what retains the freshness in the wine, it keeps the acid high, and it's what gives it the distinction.
Excellent. And so, with this maritime, can you go a little bit deeper for my listeners how does that, you mentioned the long hang time, how does that impact the grapes?
Basically, when you talk about maritime climate, you're talking about the cooling influence of the ocean and the rainfall, as mentioned previously. And as you kind of said, when you do have cooler temperatures throughout the growing season, the grapes don't accumulate sugar as rapidly, and they do have a longer hang time. And when you do pick them, the acid is naturally higher in that case. And then the cooling, when you keep the grapes nice and cool, they have that longer.
And so Bordeaux, 2017 is known as the season of hail.
Right.
And unfortunately, they just got hit again last week with more hail. Is there any type of climate issue that has occurred in the past region that have affected the region?
Right. So not on the magnitude of, say, hail. So in France, like you alluded to, Bordeaux, Chablis, there's a lot of areas that are constantly in threat of hail and frost. The biggest threat to Vino Verde would be because of the rain and because of the cool climate. Rot is a problem. So when the grapes are affected with rot, they die and you don't get frost as well. So rot's a big issue, and that has to do with the rain. That's one of the, more so than say hail or frost, that would be it.
And if you look at the region, a lot of the grapes are going to see these beautiful pergolas. Is that the reason behind it?
So, once again, all tying it together. Because it can be very cool, the grapes do need a little help sometimes to ripen. So when you have a pergola, it helps to bring the grapes a little bit more off of the ground. It actually helps against the rot as well because it exposes them to more wind, which can prevent the rot. So that's one thing. thing. And when you do bring them up a little bit too, you get a little bit more direct sunlight. But they are moving a little bit away from that. They're getting a little bit more modern with cordon training instead of pergolas, which I think that's definitely one of the winemakers would know more as to why they are doing it. But I know it's a potential like shift in the traditional pruning system.
If it has anything to do with, obviously, in a pergola, everything is going to have to be manually harvested. And if you go to using the typical cordon training, you could go to mechanical harvesting. And
commercial reasons would definitely play a factor here. And I think they might even be relying more on the heat close to the ground as well. That could be another.
How big is this region, and where exactly is it located?
The Minas Verde is the biggest region within Portugal. So it actually spans from the very northern tip of Portugal, which is kind of adjacent to the Rio Baixas region of Spain, and then it goes all the way down into Europe. So it has a really long, extensive presence in Portugal. And the main, there's rivers attached to the river, the Minho River in the north has a big role, and then it goes all the way down to the Douro River in the south. So you're kind of dealing with something like 100 kilometers or something like that?
7,000.
Yeah.
Pretty
big.
And it's more narrow than wide, correct?
Right, yeah. So they're probably trying to keep the effect of the ocean, right? So if they expand out to the east, it wouldn't be as distinctive. So they've made it that narrow, small region to maintain the consistency of the wines and have that Vino Verde style. Yeah.
So I know that in the region, they're one of the actually oldest wine making regions. It goes back almost 2,000, if not more than 2,000 years. But when did it become an official VOC?
So it became an official VOC in the 1990s, I would say. So they really didn't start, you know, creating actual like demarcations until around that time. But it was the first one in Portugal to be demarcated, just because of its like distinctive wine suitability. It does have so much that affects the wines. They wanted to grow that.
So it actually, even though that whole area technically is young in terms of demarcation,
it's
one of the older ones. It's one of the older ones. It's older than Rio Baixas.
Yeah, absolutely. It is older than a lot of, you know, neighboring regions in terms of its winemaking tradition.
And that's one of the things that kind of amazes me, is it is so, you think of port, and you think, Rio Baixas, the tradition is so far back there, yet they're so new when it comes to actually being recognized as its own
region. Right. And I think that's the main problem that's plaguing Portugal in general, is that when anyone thinks Portugal, they automatically go to port, right? And a big thing is, too, we're not familiar with grapes, you know, so Alvarinho is one of the main grapes, Tejadora is a main grape, Arento, Alvesto, so no one knows these grapes, so that's what makes it difficult for the wines to gain recognition.
And sadly, I think Americans like to drink wines that they can pronounce. Like, they have to look up how to pronounce it, it's an issue, you know, I mean, you have a lot of the German grapes, but people drink Riesling because they can pronounce it. So you actually just mentioned one of the main grapes in the variety, but Vino Verde actually does have red grapes also, correct?
Yes, so the main red grapes, the pronunciations once again are a little bit difficult, but there is red wine up there as well. So Espadero and Dinhal and Padero are the three main red grapes, and a lot of that is going into rosé production as well. So they're using those red grapes for rosé, and then lighter, more delicate reds as well.
If you had to give an estimate, not a specific number, out of the 100% of wine that's being made in Vino Verde, what percentage would be white?
90%. So it's really a big portion of white, but they are doing a little bit of the rosé.
And is that more newer? That's horrible grammar right there. But
that's
the red coming out is new, or have
I think, I mean, we could definitely consult with some of the winemakers here, but in my opinion, I find that they are getting a little bit more, they're having a tendency to make more red wine because the technology is catching up, right? So I think they're doing more temperature control. They have more, you know, cleanliness in the wineries. So that's helping to kind of expand the repertoire of wines, and the red wines are gaining more popularity.
If somebody wanted to walk into a store, they would say, all right, I'm going to go experience this Pinot Noir. What would be two characteristics that you would say they can expect?
Right. Yeah, so Pinot Verde, the big one is that really nice, sharp, bright, refreshing acid. If you want a high acid wine, citrus-driven, citrus notes, and just really crisp, that's your start, that's your Vino Verde. But as I'm kind of showing you, the grapes, Albarino, does age well as well. So I would, in my opinion, I would start with that really young, fresh, vibrant Vino Verde, and then maybe ask the wine store, do they have one that's a little more aged, to experience how it could evolve as well. So that would be more textured, more smooth, and a little bit more ripe food character, right? Instead of the really young, crisp.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
So I'm back with another song from New York City, Charles Springfield, and we're going to talk a little bit more about generalizations of the Vino Verde region, and then we're going to go specifically into terroirs and how it affects the wines itself. So first, Vino Verde kind of is known for fizz, right? So, but how does that fizz get in there?
Sure. So Vino Verde has a couple of different connotations. A lot of people are familiar with a Vino Verde style that's going to be low in alcohol and have a little bit of effervescence, a little bit of trapped CO2. So whenever you ferment a grape, the yeast on the skins eat the sugar, converts that to alcohol, and that releases carbon dioxide. But in this version, it's a little bit trapped. And sometimes some winemakers will add a little bit of carbon dioxide in there to give a little bit of fizz, because people are familiar with that kind of style. But in this table, we have a little bit of take away a little bit of break from that kind of style. None of these have effervescence in them, but they're going to be a little bit more complex versions of Vino Verde. It really opens up people's minds in a lot of ways.
And Vino Verde is known to be a light wine. What is the average alcohol content that somebody can expect in these wines?
Yeah, sure. You can go as low as around 8%. And I have wines here as high as 13.5. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so that's surprising to me. I didn't think it went that high.
Yeah, it could be very high. They're known to be kind of light to medium. So on the lighter side, you get, like I said, 8%. This side, we have like slightly warmer climates. The grapes get really ripe, produce a little more sugar. That extra sugar produces a little more alcohol. So 13.5%.
Excellent. And so Vino Verde has a lot of expression. So I think it's a great wine for food pairings. And there is a whole bunch of examples of food pairings here. But what would you suggest, two or three best food pairings?
Oh, sure. Like if you go from the lighter Vino Verde, definitely like light shellfish, anything seafood related, certainly light cheese. And you can do like if you have a slightly sweeter, like I would say sweeter, but a little fruitier, something a little bit spicy. So maybe like some sausage, chorizo, or something from Spain. You can have like Thai food or even Indian food. Really interesting to pick up some of that residual sugar in the wine. Yeah.
And your comment triggered a whole other question, because I think a lot of people out there don't understand the concept that sweet does not necessarily mean sugar, residual sugar.
Yeah, yeah. So I tell people, like, think about ripeness in terms of fruit, like a ripe apple as a pear, or like even if you get a ripe lemon, that's going to be kind of tart. But you think about sweet, think more like sugar and candy, that kind of, so to separate them to you a little bit.
And Vino Verde is fermented to dryness.
Yes, yes, fermented to dryness, and it goes to different levels like we talked about. But yeah, so it's going to be a dry wine. Some of the ones with lower alcohol, have a little bit more residual sugar, so that comes off a little bit more fruity. Yeah.
So how close is Vino Verde to location to port?
Okay, sure. So exactly the same region, and then we are at the lower southern Vino Verde area, and we're right by the Douro River, and that's where port is made. Yeah. So it kind of seems general. A lot of people don't realize Vino Verde is actually a demarcated area in Portugal, They think about it as a green wine or young wine, but it's a demarcated area, but also has a connotation of being young and fresh. But you also saw from the other table, it can be aged as well. So a lot of different thoughts of that. And then also, the other thing that people don't realize when they go to Vino Verde, it's pretty much green a lot of time of the year, so that's another connotation, the green, the Verde part. Yeah.
And that's actually where the name came from, the green of the area. It's not green wine.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people think it's either going to be green wine or the grapes are really green. But that's in the early ripening. When they ripen well, then they turn into like the pale yellow and things like that. But yeah.
And lastly, there are 9 sub-regions within the Vino Verde region. So what is some, I mean, not all 9, but like what are the general changes as you go through?
Oh, sure. So if you go to the northern inland part, you still get a little bit of that maritime breeze from the Atlantic Ocean, but you have a really cold climate. So those grapes from that region get really underripe or barely ripe. They retain a high level of acid, so you're going to have a kind of tart, tangy fruit with a little bit of saltiness to it. You go down the coast of the Atlantic and also by the Minnow and Douro rivers between those, a lot more of that kind of sea influence. And then you get close to the Douro in the southern part of Vino Verde, a lot warmer climate. So really ripe grapes. It gives a texture of like maybe like something like close to a Chardonnay in texture. So very different styles when people think about Vino Verde, slightly richer style. That's gonna hold up better with like richer cheese, maybe like chicken, and maybe sometimes pork.
Yeah. And that's gonna lead us right into your discussion of these 3 wines you have here.
Yeah, so
and
we
how
have the 3 wines. The first one is from the more coastal region off the Atlantic, Loreo. So that is actually, these are all 2017 wines, so that goes into the young, fresh version. So a lot more bright citrus notes, lemon lime, a little bit of saltiness to it, very clean and fresh. Then we go over to the southern part by the Douro River, we have a Veso, which is a little richer texture. Like that's kind of more like, it has no oak on it, but it feels like the texture of like maybe an un-oaked Chardonnay. But it still has like stone fruit, like peach and apricot, and a little bit of apple notes and pear. So it's slightly richer. And we go to the last wine we have, the Albarino, which is the northern part, but the northern coastal. And so very, very sharp and very bright. But more complex, we get the citrus notes and green apple. You also get a little bit of a nutty element, like an almond. Yeah, almond skin. So really complex. So three different distinctive wines that show very unique terroir in that region that can really, I think, it just really surprises people how vast and varied these wines can be.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vino Verde region. So first, what is president of a DOC region? What is that?
Well, this looks like a very gray and square-minded thing, but no, really, all the European regions have an association of producers which helps certify and promote their wines. That was what happens with us. We have 15,000 small grape producers and 600 bottlers, and so they all elect someone to help them promote their business, and that's what I do, and it's an exciting prospect, and I'm very happy with this.
And what is your background? Is it more in the wine, or is it more into marketing? Like, what's your individual background?
It's more into marketing. I was in Brussels doing something different. They invited me to go back to Portugal, help promote Vinho Verde, and so I've been doing that for over a decade now.
Wow, that's exciting. So what would be one distinctive characteristic of the region Vinho Verde?
Our region is very close to the sea, and the whole region is a sort of an amphitheater towards the sea. So the coastal influence, the Atlantic influence on the wine is very, very remarkable and gives the wine this personality. The granite on the soils as well, and of course the varieties. So what you'll find in the wines is perhaps a bit lower alcohol than you'll find in other whites. Certainly a bit more acidic, fresher wines. So I think they are very good for the kind of food that we're looking for today, which is more simple, more back to the roots of what we look to eat. And so we think of it as a very well-balanced wine with the gastronomy we have today.
And if somebody wanted to go to Vino Verde from here, New York City, whatever, how exactly, like, what is the airport close? Is the traveling easy? Is tourism, how's tourism there?
Well, they're very welcome. Now we have direct flights from New York to Oporto, which is, Oporto is a big wine city in Portugal, because around Oporto we have the port wine region, of course. You have Vinho Verde just to the north, just a few miles to the north, and then on the south we have Douro and Barrada, which are other wine regions. And of course, you have the Spanish side, which is just an hour's drive. So from Porto, from Oporto, you can see a number of wine regions, one of which is Vinho Verde. Vinho Verde starts just north of Porto, it goes up to the Spanish border. What can you do there? Well, it's a big region with 48 counties, with a lot of small villages and places to stay. It's very good to walk or to cycle around. And of course, the roads now are very safe and very interesting to drive around. So it's a great vacation place. Also by the sea, of course. Part of our region borders with Spain, and the rest borders, of course, with the sea. So we have almost, 100 miles of beaches from Porto up to the Spanish border. It's a lovely place to live. And unfortunately, the U.S., especially New York, is having much better weather than we are now. But that's where it is.
What would you recommend as the best time of year to go visit?
I would say spring, perhaps a bit the summer, and then the harvest season is in September and early October. Especially because it's a cooler region, so the summer is not very violent there. And spring, of course, everything is blossoming. It's a fantastic moment. And then the harvest season. We start harvesting middle of August. Now earlier than in the past, the climate is warmer, so we start harvesting a bit earlier, and then we finish by October the 5th or October the 7th. So I would say the month of September would be great to visit the region, enjoy good weather, good food certainly, and why not take part in the harvest?
Can they accept volunteers during harvest season? Like a lot of the American wineries accept volunteers during harvest. Is that something somebody could do?
Certainly. You see, as we have 15,000 grape producers, the vast majority of them are very small. So what they do is they gather with their families on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, harvest, and then on Monday they go do something else. So people who show up at wineries by the middle of the week, they will certainly find that they are very welcome. They'll be able not only to participate in the harvest, which is interesting, but also feel this family environment of everybody getting together then at lunch and dinner and enjoying the harvest and producing the wines.
And if somebody was going to go on vacation to the wine region, Vinho Verde, how do they go about in, you know, Napa, Sonoma? There's some wineries that require reservations. Where I'm from in Paso, there's not too many that require reservations. It's more family run, so you see the winemaker behind the table and people can just pop in when we're open. So what is it more like there?
Well, we have 3 or 4 wineries which in fact require reservations. They are bigger, but most of them are not. So if you show up, they'll be surprised to receive someone from so far away, and they'll certainly welcome you immediately and give you the opportunity to share some time with them, and they'll be happy to do that. Also, because there are so many of these producers, you can see the harvest anywhere. There are people carrying bags with grapes all over the place. The main squares have a different arrangement so that all the lorries can pass with the grapes and everything. So it's a bit of a festive moment in which people get together, and you can feel that the harvest is in the air, not just in the wineries, but also in the small villages, everywhere where you within the region.
And in terms of the grapes themselves, I know that traditionally they're mostly on pergolas, and that I'm assuming has something to do with the climate and allowing the moisture, the wind to hit them. But I learned today that they are starting to go towards actual cordons and cordon training. What's the reasoning behind that?
That's very interesting. In the 40s and the 50s, while the north of Europe was in war, we were not, but we had a big famine. It was very difficult to live at those times. So people would, in the middle of their fields, they would plant anything that would grow food, and they would have the vines around the field, and they would look for altitude as an alternative to occupation of the soil. And so you had those vines which actually had a great exposure to the sun, and they got wind, so it was actually very interesting. Of course, today that's not the case. So what you find in the region is this very interesting balance. While you have the new vineyards, which are cordon and are what you find in the best of, let's say, vineyard management all over the world. And then side by side you have those which are very old and produce different kinds of wines. They are very difficult to prune and very difficult to harvest, of course. You have, because you have to go upstairs and the stairs are very high. So it's I would say it's a very ethnic, traditional method, which is not the majority of the production, but which is very interesting because wine is culture. Wine is not just a drink and alcohol, not at all. It's culture. And so I think we should, of course we have new vineyards, but we should visit and preserve those old vineyards, which are very much a characteristic of our history. So we're very proud of them, and some of those wines can be found here.
You mentioned that most of the wine makers are family run. What's the average size bottle production of the wineries?
Most of the producers, what they do is they produce grapes and then they either deliver their grapes on a local cooperative or sell their grapes to a larger firm. So most of the producers will produce 2 tons, perhaps less, which they will carry somewhere else. And then you have firms which go from 5,000-10,000 liters to up to a few million liters. The largest of them produces 12 million liters, which is a very large firm, acquiring grapes from 700-800 grape producers. So I would say we have all the sizes. Of course, even the largest ones are not very large. And the smallest, on the smallest ones, you can have a family which harvest all the grapes in 1 weekend or 2 weekends. They make 2,000 or 3,000 liters. Two brands, let's say a normal and a special blend, and that's it.
And how about exporting? What would be like the average exportation percentage-wise?
Yes, we produce roughly, the whole region produces roughly 70 million liters a year. We've been making a big effort, not only in improving our vineyards, therefore our wines, but also in proposing our wines to clients overseas that will give us the value that we think we should have for the wines and that will like our wines. In the year 2000, we were exporting 15% of the business, and when we closed 2017, that value was up to 50% of the business. Now, the two major clients are the US and Germany. Two very different markets. In the US, we have all our varietals, like Alvarinho, Loredo, Azal, and others. So the more interesting wines, the ones which have more value. In Germany, it's very curious because we sell a bit more to Germany than to the US. However, the German market is very much based on large supermarkets, which buy lower quality, and I would say more competitive wines in terms of price. So in the US, actually, this is the market outside Portugal where we can find our best varieties. So we're very happy because of this event, of course, because we're bringing here the very best wines we have.
And so we are at the Vino Verde Experience in New York City, and this is a traveling experience. Where have you been? Where are you going?
Well, we have this event in New York. It's a very interesting choice. New York, Rio, and Sao Paulo in Brazil. So,
wow.
So last year we had one event here, in Brooklyn actually, and this year we have New York, and then in the winter we'll be going to Rio and Sao Paulo, which is an alternative. And of course Brazil is an important market for us because of the cultural connections. We speak the same language, and of course many Portuguese reside in Brazil and we share a lot of values. The idea here is to suggest to anyone who wants to visit us to try a selection of the best Vino Verdes, which with a selection of different foods, so they can try the pairings and see how it works. Of course, here what we have are tables with a number of producers, and each one will bring different blends, and of course their own varietals, whites and rosés. One or two may have reds, but mainly whites and rosés, which are our best wines.
Oh, so we're lucky here in New York. I thought there were different cities in New York. Like, I thought maybe you'd go to San Francisco.
No, after this great weather that we're enjoying in New York, we should wait for the winter and then go to Rio, which is also a good choice, I'd say.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to
meet
you.
Thank you. Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
And he is a winemaker. And so first off, what is
is it like to have, how do you start your production in the Vino Verde? Like, what's your season?
Yeah, in the Vino region, we have the harvest during September, October. And I am producing wines in my company since more than 20 years.
Wow, okay. So so back then, your harvest season or your growing season was basically similar to ours in California. So have you already had bud break?
Yes, it's like in California.
Okay, excellent. So let's take us through Alvarino.
Alvarino is one of the most important grape varieties in the Vino Verde region. We also have Loredo. Loredo is the most predominant grape variety, but both grape varieties are very good for in the region because they have a very good potential in terms of aromas, in terms of flavors, and that is what we are exploring when we are using these grape varieties in the wines. In the case of the single varieties of Alvarinhos, they are wines that they have not only the freshness that is traditional on the Vino Verde region, but also a very good potential to age. So it's a wine that would have a very good evolution, very in terms of complexity, in terms of structure. So with the Vino Verde, it's not only fresh, it's drinking wines. We could have much more than that. And the Alvarino is a great variety, very important when we are trying to do that kind of wines.
In terms of the grape itself, what are your major concerns as the grower? You know, are you worried about rot? Are you worried mold? Are you worried, you know, what's your concern?
In Portugal, in the Minho region where we produce the Vino Verde wines, we have a very difficult climate because we are near the Atlantic Ocean, so we have a lot of humidity, a lot of rain. So our main concern in terms of the production of the grapes, not only Alvarino but also the other grapes, it's the control of the disease, because in our region we must be really carefully about that, and this is why, for example, in our region it's very difficult to do like biological wines only in a small quantities, very small quantities, because of the conditions, the natural conditions we have. So that is our main concern.
A lot of the wineries, you know, we're concerned with getting the harvest in when it's, you know, before a rainfall. You have a lot of rainfall, correct? So how does that correlate into your planning of when you're going to harvest?
Usually, in the last years, we have a great climate during the harvest. Sometimes it's true that we have rain. I remember some years ago that it's usually that in the end of the harvest we usually have a lot of rain already. But in the last 3 years, it was 3 years very good, with a very good climate, very sun, and hot weather during the harvest. And the reason why, including during the year, it was much easier for us to control the disease. So we need to do much less treatment during the evolution of the grapes in the vineyards, because of the well conditions that we could have in the last years. Also because of that, we have seen in the last years that the Vino Verde is growing a lot, and growing a little bit in terms of the alcohol level. So the alcohol level of the Vino Verde today is not the same that like we have some years ago. And the principal reason of that is because of the conditions, the climate conditions that we are having in the last years here in the harvest.
Yes, that's something that I've noticed here today, is that I had in my brain 9-10% for Alvarino, and I'm seeing that some of them are up in the 13%. So the climate, increased day, increased temperatures during the day is increasing the alcohol.
But principally in the case of the Alvarino, because in the Alvarino, to use a Vino Verde Alvarino DOC, you need to have a minimum of 11.5. And it's usual to have, for example, in our Alvarino,
we have 13. So that is between 12.5 and 13.5. It's usually when we are talking about the single variety of reading. But in the case of even in the case of the other grape variety, we are getting higher alcohol level because of the climate conditions. Not only because of that, but also because of the way that we nowadays we are producing the grapes in the region to maximize the exposure of the sun to have a better condition to produce.
So my lack of soil consistency.
Soil is the traditional in that we can produce.
Excellent. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
Nice meeting you. Unique here, you are actually the vineyard owner and the winemaker, so you're producing wine from your own grapes.
We have our production of 6,000 bottles, more or less, and we just do it our grapes of our people. Yes. We also make 10,000 bottles of sparkling a year. But that's why we don't want to buy grapes. We just want our wines to have the grapes of our people. Okay?
Excellent. So, you have Albarino, it's the sparkling of an Albarino also?
Yes, and 100% sparkling Albarino. Yes.
So, let's get into a little bit of the technical aspects of it. How many hectares do you support?
We have 10 hectares. All in the close to the river Minho, in the border of Galicia and Spain, we have a 20. This plantation has 20 years, so it's very, very good. The grapes now and the wine.
You're up north,
that's
the northern region of Vinho Verde?
Yes, the region of Vinho Verde. Particularly the Albarino region, that Monção Melgaço, that is the birth of Albarino.
And I'm hearing that there's mostly granite soil throughout, is that what you're...
Yes, granite. And there in Monção Melgaço, we have particular climate because of the mountains that protect us from the sea. That's why the Albarino becomes so fantastic produces there in Monção Melgaço.
In terms of the actual process of baking it, are you picking different grapes for your still for the single varietal Albarino versus the champagne, or is it just an all-over thing?
Yeah, we normally pick it to 1 month, 3 weeks earlier to make the sparkling.
And is it a different block of fruit or
We choose a higher part of the quinta, of the plant, because there the characteristics are more acidity and better for the sparkling wine, and less alcohol.
And how are you producing the sparkling? Is it in the Champagne method?
It's a traditional way, the Champagne way. Normally we just bottle 2 years after the vineyard, okay?
And is that, you are the first person I've heard that is making sparkling in the region, so it's not very popular?
It begins now being characteristic. A lot of producers are now beginning to make sparkling. Maybe in this moment, maybe we have 15 producers making the sparkling. Yeah. Okay.
And now, tell me, what caught my eye was your label, the bird. Tell us the story behind your bird.
Yeah, the bird. Our farm was established by the king in the 16th century. It was the feudalism, no, the kings thin the family to collect taxes. So our farm was chosen by the king to the people of the region take all the 10% of that, all that produces, no? They produce some 10%, they take that. Maybe the old king thought it was the better land of the Algarve in that moment, okay? Maybe that's why our wine is so fantastic too.
And now, for being a small producer in terms of being yourself, you know, growing your own fruit and bottling and producing your own wine, you're still distributed. Where in the United States can they find you?
Yeah, now we have, I have a distribution in Virginia. It's a company out there. I know they are processing to another state of the USA. Here in New York, I don't have it. I'm here in this fair, in this event, to try to get someone who interests to have a very good opportunity to work here. That's why.
And what is your, are you on social media anywhere? People can find out more about you, your website, where can people find out about you?
Yeah, we have www.regendomelgaco.com where you can find all the information and we can contact everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D for Dracena and P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte! Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D for Dracena and P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!